From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this afternoon around 1 o'clock as we are hitting the record button. We'll discuss Lane Kiffin. I guess you'll hear from Lane Kiffin during today's show as well. And then a lot of baseball as Ole Miss beat UNA last night 20-6, but clearly not the story. Ole Miss senior captain infielder Tim Elko has suffered some level of knee injury. The preliminary signs indicate it being pretty severe. So we'll go through what we know, when we might know more, and everything else associated with that we can tell you as of right now as we get the show started. The show brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. You can download the Speed Pass Plus app. Take advantage of that. Earn some points. And when you earn points, you save money there with the Oxford Exxon and all Blue Sky locations in Mississippi. You get the lunch special, $5.69, two sides, bread, 32-ounce drink. Go check out the hot case, chicken, pork, side items, desserts, and more inside the Oxford Exxon. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is that number. Call it. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours right to the bottom line. No hassle, no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is completely up to you. You can shop that quote around, or you can do what I've done, what I recommend that you do. And let's hop into a Clark Ford today, 662-257-1900. Guest, join us on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. Rafters Music and Food on the Square in Oxford. Be a great place this weekend to hang out before, after, during Ole Miss Arkansas baseball series. You can watch Masters, I guess that starts, what, Thursday?
Thursday, yep.
Masters is getting started, so there's a lot of stuff to do. Plus, if you don't want to watch anything, just want to hang out, enjoy the vibe at Rafters, you can do that as well. Great burgers, po' boys, appetizers, menu's fantastic. You'll love the great beer selection, full bar, all the live music and everything else at Rafters Music and Food on the Square in Oxford and also in New Albany.
So, if you've been under a rock sometime last night, well, the fourth inning of yesterday afternoon's game against Ole Miss and UNA, the Rebels were up 16-4 at the time. Tim Elko hits a ball to second base, and UNA, as they have a tendency to do, was kicking it around a little bit. They threw wide of the bag. Elko, trying to avoid the first baseman, also kind of trying to potentially go to second base, depending on how it got away from him. He did kind of a stutter step, but clearly went awkwardly onto his right knee, fell to the ground immediately, couldn't put any weight on it, needed help kind of getting up, was able to put weight on it as he got toward the dugout. You could see from the cameras that they performed what's called a drawer test on his knee there. And it's essentially testing the stability of the ACL is what that test is. I have no idea whether he passed or failed that test. However, nobody's been overly optimistic around the program since that happened.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be negative here, but if the results had been super positive,
of course, yeah,
you would have heard, hey, you know, we were worried.
Got shot here. Yeah,
we were worried, but you know, some of the doctors are kind of optimistic that maybe it's okay.
It's not what we think it is.
Yeah, so, you didn't get that.
He ends up coming back into the dugout a little while later. Crutches, knee brace, which were standard for any knee injury. That's not necessarily telling. But even how his teammates reacted to him, there was sadness, everybody physically comforting him, some hugs, some different things. You could tell that it was pretty severe at that point. Mike, as we knew Mike was going to do, it's not a criticism. He's going to wait until official diagnosis come before he tells the media much. He said that there was a twist, that there was pain in the knee area, so they got him out of the game. They hoped for the best, and obviously everybody was pretty shaken up by frankly, one of their better players suffering that injury. I ran it across multiple orthopedic surgeons last night. I ran it by a couple PTs as well. And the overwhelming thought is that while it didn't twist as much as most ACL injuries twist, every other sign pointed toward an ACL tear. Again, not reporting that. This is 1 o'clock on Thursday. It could come out in 15 minutes either way. I have no idea. But all signs pointed to that. And then the quote that I put on the message board earlier this morning was from Dr. Reeves Moore. He's an orthopedic surgeon with Special Orthopedic. He was one of the guys that worked on Tua with his hip when he had that big thing. He worked for Alabama for a while. He's worked with James Andrews. His quote was, classic ACL injury pattern, non-contact twisting injury. Next concern is associated meniscus or cartilage injuries that can have a more profound effect on long-term outcomes and return to play. So he seemed at least fairly definite from watching the video there on that. And you don't hear of one ligament tear, typically. Usually if there's a ligament tear, there are multiple tears to some extent. So you're talking LCL, PCL, ACL, MCL, whatever ligaments are in your knee, you typically tear more than one of those. So we'll see. It could leak out what the results are. My assumption is that Mike will update everybody after the game tonight. Ole Miss plays Alcorn State at 6:30 tonight, so we'll have a Zoom call with him when that game is complete. They will have the MRI back, I would assume, by then, from all the indications that I've been given. But I think at this moment, at least from our conversation standpoint, and barring some miracle that I'm not expecting, probably focusing the discussion on what Ole Miss does in 2021 without Tim Elko moving forward.
So let's go there. Obviously, yesterday we were talking about national seeds and all of those kinds of things, and the NCAA announcement that I think May the 10th they would announce regional host and super regional host and things of that nature.
That's correct.
Just kind of
and real quick on that, no further really information at all is known as far as what that means, what it does not mean, how the bids work, or nothing. It's been a complete and utter black hole since we talked to Kendall yesterday afternoon.
Shocking.
No one knows anything.
So what does it mean for this team? Obviously, I mean, he's the heart of the order. I think SEC Player of the Month was announced.
National Hitter of the Month.
National Hitter of the Month on a team that
needs the bat.
I mean, there's really no way to spin it. From a lineup standpoint, it is a massive loss.
Oh, it is a devastating loss. I mean, it wasn't even a disagreement necessarily or anything, but I told you this morning that I'm not sure there's a player on the roster that hurts Ole Miss worse being out for a long period of time. I mean, I mentioned, obviously, you want Gunner to be healthy, but I'm mentioning in passing that I think they could withstand Gunner Hoglund suffering the injury more than Tim Elko. And I still buy by that. You're talking about a lineup that has not been necessarily efficient 1-9. They need the power bat, and frankly, they need the right-handed power bat, because you're talking about a lineup that, depending on what you do on the given day, they start 6 or 7 left-handed hitters in that lineup. You know, Justin Bench is right-handed, Peyton Chatney is right-handed, and Tim Elko is right-handed. Otherwise, everybody's left-handed. Obviously, Plumlee gives you a right-handed bat. Cale Baker gives you a right-handed bat. But it's few and far between on what the options are moving forward. There's the fall-off is magnified. I mean, I kind of – in the middle of me trying to figure out kind of what to write and what to report, I mean, this is seriously for Ole Miss going to be one of those situations kind of like in the movie Moneyball when they're sitting around the table and you go, hey, one guy's not replacing him, so how do we figure out a way to make this happen overall? I mean, it is a bit of a college midseason version of that, except there's no free agency. You got to find it on your roster somewhere, and how do you go about doing it?
So who do you put at first base? We'll start there because someone has to play the position, so that is
right,
the first.
Okay, we've got three options there.
Okay.
And it rotates everything else. If you want to do a straight one-for-one switch, somebody goes in the lineup and Tim Elko comes out, your options are Cale Baker. Cale Baker, who has been out with a hamate bone injury for the majority of the season. He came back yesterday. I think the stat, he's had 38 at bats. He struck out 20 times. He's not put the ball in play. He's not transitioned well at all from junior college. And really, even looking back at 2020, he had one great game and one really good weekend. And he's struggled otherwise. He's had a hard time with SEC pitching. He's had a hard time with Power 5 pitching in this point. So if you're doing a straight one-for-one, it's him or Trey LaFleur. Trey LaFleur, the sophomore. I'm high on him long-term. He's one of those kind of futures I'd buy all of. Very athletic kid. Now he's left-handed. It's another left-handed bat, but the hell with that right now. Just find the hitter wherever it's
sure.
at. But he's been out with mononucleosis for 3 weeks. He was only hitting like 172 before he left. There's power, but he has not gotten consistent in bats. I think if you're going to do a straight switch somewhere, I think the answer has to be you play LaFleur because you believe in him to eventually figure it out, and you just give him 10 games and see what happens. You don't really worry about this weekend or next weekend. You go, you know what? You're going to get You're going to get 4 weeks, and we're going to see where this thing's at in the end of 4 weeks. I mean, this is where, in all honesty, the 7-2 cushion does give you a little bit of room to kind of, hey, you got to figure this out by the end of it. I mean, Ole Miss is going to make the postseason, so
yeah,
what's in good shape when you get there? Your other first base option is switching people around. It's moving Kevin Graham. It's moving him back to first base. Kevin's played there in the past. Not a great defender, but you're trying to just figure it out. If you do that, you're probably talking about John Rhys Plumlee getting the majority of the bats in the outfield, because you got to slide somebody and do something or do whatnot. So I think that is an option. It makes you worse defensively at first base. But you and I talked about this a lot this morning, and this is kind of nuanced. If you don't think LaFleur can do it, Plumlee is probably your best option because of – we can always talk about this – your nine net best aren't necessarily the best nine.
Of course.
And when you do that and you try to fit the puzzle together, Plumlee's going to give you some ability defensively. His at-bats have gotten better. He's done a pretty good job at least eking out some quality at-bats from time to time, and he's got some bat speed when he does hit it. He can run. He can do some different things that, frankly, Ole Miss isn't very good at. Yeah. Ole Miss is not a great running team. Ole Miss is not a great defensive team. So he helps there.
He has tools.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's my second thing I would do. I would still lean toward LaFleur playing whenever he's 100% healthy. I mean, he could be weak from the mono. I don't know. Because Mike said last night, look, the score was in a spot where we could get those guys some at-bats and just see where they're at. But I think those are your options. Nothing else to me makes a ton of sense. There's not like there's somebody over there where you go, oh, well, you're just going to insert him and here we go. That's not the way this works. I mean – it means McCants is absolutely your center fielder right now. There's no flexibility really to move that around. I mean, a kind of a crazy option, but an option nonetheless, would be you could move – they're not going to do this, but I'm just kind of talking. You could do some things where you end up moving Gonzalez to third. You can move Bench into short and do some different things along those lines. But I think the answer right now is look, in saying all this, I know I'm rambling, but whatever. Mike's not giving up on Kale yet. Kale's going to play some more baseball. So while I'm saying all this, I don't believe that's necessarily the first step. I think the first step is going to be giving Kale at least a couple more games to figure it out. Probably playing some right-left situational stuff a little more than maybe I would do. And then after that, we'll see. I mean, he got Plumlee a start in on Sunday against Florida. I think he ended up starting that game. Saturday, sorry.
Yeah, Nutriment.
And, you know, you're losing so much power in the middle of that order. The question is, what are you getting from your other offensive options to supply runs? Forget how they're doing it. What do you do to supply runs at this point? Because you're losing a bat in the middle that is going to make things harder on Kevin Graham. He's not going to be protected as much anymore. It puts a lot more onus on Dunhurst as an offensive player. He's got to hit. You have no choice now. He's going to have to be in middle of the lineup, kind of forcing there. And frankly, it takes margin of error away from Chatney and Bench at the top of the order. They got to get on base. I mean, you're losing the ability to have the walk and the couple strikeouts and the 2-run home run in the middle of the order from one more guy. And that's a huge part of Ole Miss's offense. I mean, Ole Miss's offense this season has been completely predicated around having some pretty rough innings, and all of a sudden they get a bloop and a blast, and they've scored 2 runs, and they're going to pitch the shit out of it, and here you go.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily their identity without Tim Elko. It's just not. So they got to figure that out.
Question in the thread, could you put Plumlee in center and move McCants to left if you put Graham at first?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, sure. I think Mike has been – well, I mean, with Elko healthy, obviously, Mike has been hesitant to move McCants out of one spot. Let's let him learn this position.
Sure,
because
of course.
While it's still outfield, it's not all the same. The ball tails completely differently in left and center and
sure,
right.
Sure, of course.
He's still an infielder trying to learn the outfield. But, yeah, you could do that. Plumlee's probably the better center fielder right now. I don't know that he has as high of a ceiling, but that's irrelevant at the moment. So, yeah, I think that would make sense. It'd make things over time easier on McCants. And then, you know, in right, you got Hayden Leatherwood. And let's be honest, that might be the guy who has the most pressure right now. Leatherwood has not been overly consistent, but he's got all the talent in the world. It's time for him to step up. If Ole Miss is going to do something in this regular season and then make a run, I think Leatherwood's the guy. I think that he's the one that's got to take that step. He's got to figure it out starting right now, and he's got to give you some power. Some extra base hit power, some better at bats, and you know, if you, we always do the statistics thing. If you gave me maybe his stats the rest of the way, I could tell you how Ole Miss is going to do moving forward.
You know, it's funny. The first reaction I had to it is, well, if you're going to achieve what you had hoped to achieve, now you ask Gunnar Hoglund and Doug Nikhazy to be even better.
Oh.
And that's a concern, because if anything, I as a coach would sit down with them and go, don't try to be better. Mm-hmm. Be you.
Look.
The temptation to get kids who care to try to do more now, those kids are, they're wired that way, and you have to almost go in and be like, hey, look, just you keep doing your thing. Don't try to make up the difference, because that's not how baseball works.
Oh, and frankly, you're making it worse, as you're saying, because a pitcher who – we mentioned this the other day. We weren't even talking about Elko, but we were talking about when a team doesn't hit well or do whatever – or it was facing Vanderbilt is what we were discussing. Yeah. It's the same principle. When you know you're not going to get a lot of run support or you've got to be perfect, you're going to miss more. I mean, and it's just high stress. Suddenly, what's a 90-pitch max effort? Out of 75, because you're just grinding and grinding and grinding, and that wears you down over time. So, no, that's probably Mike's second biggest chore right now, is telling Doug and Gunnar for sure, we're good. Calm down. Just pitch.
Right.
It's fine. We're going to figure this out.
Keep,
we're going to be all
right.
Keep
doing you.
Yeah, you're going to give us a chance to win. We're going to score some runs. We're going to put up some zeros. It's cool. Because, yeah, you don't want Gunnar Hoglund out there going, God, if I get a ball up and hits out, that's it. That's game. Can't miss there. And, that freaks you out. I mean,
sure.
And Ole Miss has had guys that have struggled with that over the years. I mean, that's been a problem. So
certainly changes the tone of this weekend. In many ways, it's it kind of becomes a – not a litmus test. That's the wrong term. But it makes it – okay, well, you're going to go up against one of the better teams in the league, potentially one of the better teams in the country, a team that struggles to score runs at times, that pitches pretty well, whose bullpen is lights out, mm-hmm. who hits bullpens. Mm-hmm. You're going to face them in what probably will be tight games. How do you overcome not having him? Because you're not going to have him this weekend. I mean, no. I feel safe in saying that.
Absolute best case scenario is not him suiting up on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, he's – yeah. In your fantasy world, he doesn't even play this weekend. So mm-hmm. how do you overcome that? I mean, realistically, he's not playing again this year. But, you know, how do you overcome that? And you get to start finding out over these next two weekends, because you've got a team coming in this weekend, and then you've got to go to Starkville next weekend to play a team that pitches it really well, that doesn't do a lot of other things particularly well, but they pitch it really well. And you've got to figure it out from a lineup standpoint, and you got to not let it be a mental thing too. It is a hell of an ask at this point. Hey guys, overcome this in the middle of the year.
Well, and what you mentioned is, I mean, just more stress, because it's not like, hey, we play Belmont this weekend. I mean, kids know the score; they get it. I mean, you feel the energy and all the different stuff. So, I mean, just. Just facing Arkansas is another level of, hey, calm down. And we'll see how Mike does with that. I mean, tonight, I have a hunch that tonight is going to feel somewhat kind of like when Ole Miss played Presbyterian in after Laquon Treadwell's injury a week later after Auburn, a little bit. They're just going to have to mentally get through one after an inferior opponent and then kind of see where it goes from there. And frankly, it's a good thing. They get to get back out on the field. They get to take a breath a little today. You know, if you're gonna if you're gonna have an issue, you'd rather have it and go ahead and get all this kind of out tonight versus Friday, as things move forward against Arkansas. You know, it just, and look, I know everybody said it. I mean, it was a freak play. There's no criticism toward Mike for having Tillmoko in that game in the fourth inning.
Had it been the eighth inning, you might have an argument. Sure. But baseball players play baseball.
Yeah. I don't remember another torn ACL the whole time I've been covering Ole Miss. I just don't. I mean, maybe there has been one, but I don't remember it. Frankly, I don't remember many season-ending injuries that weren't arm-related. They just don't happen much. That's not something that you see. So,
baseball players play baseball.
Yeah, they do. Every day.
So, you know.
We'll see. I think something will. My guess is something does leak out prior to 6:30, but it has not as of 1:20. I haven't tried overly hard, but I figure it's one of those things they'll tell you when they want you to know. So
it is what it is.
Yeah, and you know, nothing's changing the MRI at this point either way. So we'll find out. He's not playing tonight against the Braves, obviously.
Big Ben wants to know if you could put McCants at first base. That
wouldn't make sense for me. I mean, there are other options there. If you did something really weird just to be better defensively and you had another infielder, you could move Bench over there, I guess. But, again, that still doesn't make
sense. Here's the thing. When you as a coach do a lot of weird stuff, the message that you send is panic.
Yeah.
We're screwed. And that's the exact opposite message that you want to be sending right now. This is where maybe internally you're
panicking a little.
Your stomach is just a ball of acid. But externally you want to look like, hey, we're okay here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look, let's say Friday night you lose a 2-1 game. You don't want to be, oh, God, the end of the world. You got to – right now, this is not chew your team's ass out time. This is love them a little bit.
Yes.
Tell them you believe in them a little bit.
So you don't go to the stadium and go, oh, well, today Dunhurst is playing second. No, hold on. Like, let's chill. It's going to be all right.
So. Yeah, I mean, this is – there are different times, and look, Mike's a good coach. He knows the psychology of kids, I think, better than he gets credit for. There's times when throwing the bat and having that scene in Bull Durham where you throw everybody into the shower and you spill the bat rack into the shower. There's times when that works.
That's not today.
And there's times when that's the exact opposite of what you need. There's times where it's, hey, you know, shit happens.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be okay. You're all here because you're SEC players. It's going to be all right. I believe in you. We're calm. Shaking up your lineup like, oh, God, no, that is – you can't fool the kids. Mm-hmm. That tells the kids we're in trouble. Yeah. And once they think – you think they're in trouble, they're in trouble. And at that point, you are in trouble.
Yeah. So, whatever we hear, we'll let you know on the board, and in case it's still on the podcast, we'll do that, but I think we'll probably be off before that happens. But in the meantime, the podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Citrus County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. They're getting local underwriting, understands your market, a leader in condo financing, the float-down option, and more. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
We're also brought to you by Joey Erickson at Heron Gear Chevrolet. Let him help you find the vehicle you're looking for at a price you can afford. Choose from a full selection of new Chevy vehicles or get a great deal on numerous brands of reliable pre-owned vehicles. Give Joey a call or text on his cell, 662-571-2367. Tell him what you're looking for or stop by at 1685 High Street in Jackson to test drive that new or used vehicle you've been wanting. Let him earn your business. Be sure to tell him that you heard about this on the Oxford Exxon podcast or the Soft Verbal podcast. You get a $50 gas card, which these days will buy you like 3 gallons of gas. It'll buy you more than three. Buy you 10.
How much money?
50. You get about 4 gallons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Four and a half.
Yeah. We're also brought to you by The Rogue. The Rogue's your destination for fine men's clothing. They're stylist hand-select pieces from top designers from work to life. To lifestyle, to nightlife, it's perfect. Something for everyone at The Rogue. Peter Millar, Martin Dingman, Jack Victor, Halsey, True Grit, Duckhead, and more. 4450 I-55 North in Jackson or at therogue.com. You can also call them at 601-362-6383. And we're brought to you by Blue Delta Jeans. They make the best fitting, most comfortable jeans in the world because they're uniquely made for you and only you. Raw denim jeans, custom fit and hand tailored in Tupelo, Mississippi. One size fits one at BlueDeltaJeans.com. Double Decker may not be happening in Oxford this spring, but Blue Delta is happy to present the Blue Delta Blues Alley on April 23rd, 24th. It's the weekend of the LSU home baseball series and the Grove Bowl. Friday night, Joe Austin and the Tallahatchies will play from 4 to 6, and 6 to 8 will be Grammy Award nominated Jimmy Duck Holmes, the proprietor of Blue Front Cafe, the oldest surviving juke joint in Mississippi. Joe Austin and the Tallahatchies will be back on Saturday from 2 to 6 for an afternoon of music. So come on out to the Blue Delta Studio. Have a great time celebrating Oxford, and Rebel Grove listeners can redeem 10% off using Rebel Grove in the Oxford Studio. And we are brought to you by our friends at Alpha Specialties. Alpha Specialties located at 1670 Highway 80 in Pearl, Mississippi. They're your trailer-specific professional. If you want to haul it, they can call it. They're the premium trailer dealership in Mississippi. They've got Load Trail. They've also got Hallmark cargo trailers. They've even worked with third parties to have game day trailers and concession trailers built. They have, for podcast listeners, spare tires and wheels starting at $100, a full selection of trailer parts and accessories, hitches, winches, straps, and more. They do all types of truck accessories, and listeners get 10% off a yearly trailer service and inspection at Alpha's Full Service Shop. They can repair all types of trailers, so get in touch with them at 601-932-9798 or check them out at alphaofms.com.
Podcast is brought to you by Northeast Spark, that's serving people across rural communities. Two packages, the Ignite, the 100 Mbps, or the Gig, I mean the Blaze, the one gig that powers the Clark Ford Studio. Your hometown team bringing you world-class broadband. That's nespark.com, 662-238-3159. Phone service also available. Network security, wireless mesh extender, and more. Find out if they are in your area and can be hooked up for you. Again, that's nespark.com. So we talked about it in November. Do you think, we'll play Lane in a minute, do you think more people will watch the Masters now with it being in its normal April spot and the spring and everybody kind of, all the renewal that takes place for that?
Yeah, and I think there will be some people who will watch it because the Masters kind of stood up a little.
You think that will help there?
Yeah.
PGA Tour in general did that, so they were leaving the Tour Championship in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think there will be a certain degree of people.
Augusta does not typically budge on much.
No.
Not really their MO.
I do. I mean, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, good or bad. I'm just, you're asking
it's
me a question.
It's just a futile argument because we know they're not going to budge. So when Oberman spends all this time on, hey, Augusta's next, it's like, okay, great.
Awesome. No, there will be people who will be like, you know what? I wasn't going to watch it, but I'll watch it now just to piss off Keith Olbermann. Is that, do those people exist? Yeah. Sure. You know, now they'll have to overcome. They're not going to have Tiger.
Yeah. Which is a huge deal in all.
Sure. Well, for the mainstream golf fan like me.
Mm-hmm. Tiger moves the needle.
Tiger draws my eyeballs.
He is the needle.
And the lack of Tiger can turn my eyeballs off.
Suddenly you need something compelling.
Sure.
And there aren't a lot of things that you would find compelling.
Nah, but I'll be honest. I'm not quite the guy that's like, okay, I'm going to watch this just to piss off Keith Olbermann, but I'll probably think about it. I want the ratings to be good, if I'm honest. Because I'm like, you know this. I think Major League Baseball overreacted. I think Major League Baseball made a mistake.
Yeah.
And when on the immediate heels of that, the PGA Tour and Augusta National say, and look, it's one thing to make the joke about Augusta National, like they don't care what anyone outside of those grounds think. Fair enough.
Yeah.
PGA Tour does.
Oh, that's a lot of charity, a lot of money, a lot of people, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a different creature than Augusta National.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So when, you know, so it's funny to like, oh yeah, Billy Payne and the
Well, because Augusta's its pirate ship. It can fund itself. I mean, that happened. Like they had the whole pissed off people with the commercials. They went, "Ah, fine, we'll just do it ourselves."
Of course.
That's fine. But no, the PGA Tour interests to a lot of people.
It's a much bigger corporation.
Yeah. All the stakeholders are involved in the PGA Tour is in the hundreds and thousands.
And so when they say, "You know what? We're just not doing all this. We're not getting into this. We're a professional sports organization that puts on golf tournaments, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to put on golf tournaments."
Mm-hmm.
It, yeah. I mean, I don't play golf. I don't watch golf. But do I appreciate that? Of course I do. Sure. Of course. Are there a lot of people out there that watch sports just to see sports? Sure.
Of course.
Of course. I mean, yes. You know, I mean, so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, am I more inclined to watch it? Sure.
Grind makes a good point, too, so especially relative to their fan base. Yes, MLB made a mistake. Golf and baseball have very similar fan bases, and golf did it differently. It's true. They share a lot of the same fans.
Yeah. Look, here's the thing about what Major League Baseball did. And you can have a lot of opinions on the Georgia bill, the law itself.
There's something there for everybody. It's kind of that monster where either side you want to do, you can find it.
And I actually sat down and read the thing. I grinded through the bill. And when you read legalese,
it's a task.
Yeah. But I did. And so you move it from Georgia, you move the All-Star game from Georgia to Colorado. You take money away from the city of Atlanta, which has a very large African-American population, and you move it to Denver, which doesn't. I'm not saying one's right or wrong, good or bad or better. No, I'm not saying that. But you take money out of a city that has a large African-American population and move it to a city that doesn't. And then you move it from a state in Georgia to a state in Colorado that has stricter voting rules than Georgia does. Major League Baseball could have handled it differently. Major League Baseball could have said, could have said nothing. They could have said, look, we're a professional sports league. The players' union did not force that issue. Corporations did. And Major League Baseball could have said, look, we're not doing this. We're not getting into the middle of something right here that's really complex. We're not going to accuse the state of Georgia of being racist, which is what they did when they pick up and move the game. You make an accusation that you can't pull back now. And so I thought they made an error. A significant
error. And one that they absolutely can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
And one that makes people who don't appreciate that level of labeling less apt to buy your product. To go to your games. And unlike the NBA or some of the other sports that are, the NFL in particular, it's not necessarily gate-driven. Major League Baseball's pretty gate-driven.
Huge, Greg. I mean, hugely.
You know, you've already got a summer coming up that potentially could be very volatile in our country. I mean, we've got this trial on. Who knows where this trial is going to go and how it's going to end and when it's going to end and what's going to happen. So you're already asking people, hey, come out in public and go to games. Oh, and by the way, look, Major League Baseball is known for PR blunders, and this was a clunker of a PR blunder.
And as I mentioned to you earlier today, Manfred's got a similar problem because he's actually a member of Augusta National. So are you going to the tournament this week?
Yeah, it's in Georgia.
What are you doing?
I mean, are you gonna withdraw your put your money where your mouth is and withdraw your membership to Augusta? Yeah. Go for it. I want to see that. And when they said, well, the corporations put a lot of pressure on us. Okay, well, then why don't you turn around and go, okay, Coca-Cola, move out of Georgia.
Yeah.
Delta, move out of Georgia. No one said that. There was a much more nuanced conversation that could have taken place that didn't take place. And it felt rushed. It felt like this. The All-Star game's not till July. Oh, we're going to punish you. Who did you really punish when you do that? I mean, who really pays the price for what you actually did? I'm not talking about the PR move. Who benefits from getting to go, oh, yeah, look at us. We really care. No, who pays? The hotels in Atlanta? The businesses in Atlanta? The restaurants, the bars in Atlanta?
All the community endeavors to get the money and different things from it?
Yeah.
Tons of community endeavors there.
Yeah. Who pays?
Yeah. Because that was one of the PGA Tour's things they said was, well, you're talking about punishing an area that we fund tons of money into in places that you'd like us to promote and bring up. I mean, like, that's where we put a lot of money from the Tour Championship. It goes into this places and different things. So when you pull out, you're just stopping helping now. That's all you're doing. So.
Yeah. Uncle Slate says, Neil, Colorado has universal vote by mail. Its voting laws are not stricter than those in Georgia. Yes, but they have much stricter identification laws in place. I don't want to get into a debate here on this show about voter laws. The majority of Americans feel that you should have some form of voter ID. But they absolutely expanded in Georgia the number of days that you can go to the ballot box. They did. The way some of the people in the media have played that, when I'm going to tell you this, when Bob Nightingale comes out with some big sweeping. I promise you, Bob Nightingale didn't read one word of that bill. He may have read the New York Times assessment of it.
What did he say?
Oh, just kudos, applause to MLB.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. Well, when attendance is down and when you don't sell as many subscriptions to extra innings and to DirecTV and stuff like that, we'll see. And that's exactly what's going to happen. And yes, we live in an atmosphere where people are so sick of it that they will absolutely turn it off. And with a sport like Major League Baseball, if you lose fans, I don't know that they come back. We talk about that when you talk to college administrators. That's their biggest fear. Hey, if we lose people coming to the stadium, can we ever get them to come back again?
Well, I mean, we have that conversation all the time because it just takes one thing. That one thing's not the same for anybody, but everybody's got that one thing that, I'm good. I'm not coming back this, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, that's the deal here that I find so interesting, too, is, I mean, it's what colleges are dealing with right now just because of the pandemic. Well, people couldn't come in last week. Well, then, okay. I mean, last year, well, are they coming back now? They find it easier to stay home? Well, that goes for every sport. That goes for every corporation. That goes for everything.
So. And again, we're getting into minutiae, and I don't have the bill in front of me, but I did read it. They didn't eliminate early voting. In fact, they added more early voting in person. For people who are 65 and older, you can still mail-in vote. You can't request the mail-in vote as early. Rather than being able to request the mail-in vote 6 months out, they don't start until 3 months out. But the bottom line is, and people don't like it when I do this, it's kind of like a vaccination. If you want to vote, you can vote. This is my opinion. This is subjective. I think it added integrity to the voting process. In a state where the integrity, I'm not saying it was or was not, anything happened, but in a state where there are still to this day questions in that state about what may have or may not have happened in November. Is that a fair way of putting
it? That's fine. Yeah.
It eliminates some of that. We're at the end of an election in Georgia when the votes are counted. More people are going to feel confident in the results that are counted. That's what they went for. Now, are there politics in the bill? Yes, there are politics in every bill. Ever passed, ever.
Yeah, read through the bottom of every bill, and you'll find God knows what.
Well, look at the last infrastructure bill. Not an infrastructure, the last stimulus package for COVID relief, which more than half of it had nothing to do with COVID. I mean, that's politics. That's always going to be the case. Anyway, from a Major League Baseball standpoint, I think they made a mistake. I think the numbers will bear that out over time.
So we'll go to Kiffin in the next segment. On a much more important note here, seeing on the Twitter a minute ago, Creed 3 is something that's going to happen.
Ooh.
Without Sylvester Stallone. You still watching? No Rocky in Creed 3.
Probably not.
Means he's dead, right?
I would think.
We killing him and then doing a sequel?
Yeah, but I don't know what's left.
Sylvester Stallone has confirmed he will not return as Rocky Balboa for Creed 3. Quote, it will be done, but I won't be in it. Keep punching.
Look, spoiler alert.
I think I'm done.
Spoiler alert. They wrapped up Creed 2 pretty neat, Bo.
Why do you need to?
I don't think you do.
I think you run the risk of a dog here.
Well, he's a great actor. And he might not be capable of producing a dog. He's that
Michael
good.
B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan is that good of an actor. He's amazing. But look, the Rocky thing is about Rocky. Yes, the last couple, they've really built the Adonis Creed character.
They've transitioned.
In a great way.
Sure.
But they still leaned pretty heavily on Rocky Balboa.
It's still Rocky.
And so you take Rocky Balboa out of this after you've already sort of wrapped up Adonis Creed. He made, again, spoiler alert, he made peace with his dad.
Yeah.
We even saw Ivan Drago and his son kind of come to peace. They've made peace with that.
They tied up a lot of bows.
It kind of felt like the box was completely neatly wrapped.
I just don't know where we go.
And so, yeah, I mean, again, Michael B. Jordan's a stud.
Yeah.
And the Adonis Creed character is fantastic.
But you got to be really careful.
You got to tread real lightly on this. You're going to have to come up with something, and it's got to be tied in some form to Rocky.
Because we can't completely just go out into the 180.
I mean, if they can do that, I'll tip my hat. But I don't really – I'd have to sit here and think for a little, how do you do that? When the whole reason that we were wrapped up in Adonis Creed, beyond it being Michael B. Jordan being a phenomenal actor.
Sure.
But the reason we're wrapped up in Adonis Creed is because it's Apollo's kid.
And this would be the ninth one. Ninth. That's tough. The only thing that goes nine is horror franchises.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah, and in those, you sort of know.
We know Freddie and Jason are doing whatever Freddie and Jason are doing.
You're going to go buy your popcorn and get a Coke, and you're going to watch 2 hours of
some slasher movie.
Yeah, ha ha ha, go home.
Yeah.
There's a little more to this.
Where the killer always walks, never runs ever, but always catches up to the person running because they fall down like every 8 steps. I mean, their feet are just tied together.
Well, it's like the guy commercial where the group of kids can go to the running car, but instead they go to the chainsaws. And the killer's like. But I mean, people, I guess.
Do we get slasher movies anymore? Those aren't really a thing.
I don't think that's a thing anymore.
Well, yeah, they were moral compasses like way back in the day. It was all about, hey, you go do bad things as teenagers, you get killed.
Yeah.
Because it was always the ones that were smoking or having sex or doing like whatever they were doing.
Right.
I mean, that's what made Halloween so good was suddenly, no, they're just killing to kill. No, you didn't do anything wrong. Just babysitting. Like, it's fine.
But people evaluate the Rocky movies. I mean, like Rocky V came out and everybody was like, whoa.
No, it's.
Hold up.
You don't get a pass.
It'll be a real
challenge. Because they came back even a little enough with 6. It was fine. Rocky Balboa was fine. Where he fights Antonio Tarver.
It
was fine.
It strained credulity, but...
It was fine.
It was fine.
It was the Chili's of the Rockies franchise.
Well, yo,
okay.
We needed to know, hey, what's up with Rock? Is he okay?
Yeah.
What's going
all
on?
All good.
Because we knew Adrian had died and...
Yeah.
What's going on with Rocky? Is he all right?
Got an Italian restaurant. He's cool.
And you could have found out that it ain't perfect, but you know what? Nah. Old Rock, he's all right, and he's tough as nails.
And they found some way to get some endorsements or something, right? That's the thing that really strained the credibility of the entire franchise. I mean, he was the number one fighter on the planet from a PR standpoint for a period of time.
Yeah, here. You would think at least he could do like the George Foreman grill or something, right?
Somebody's doing something to make sure Rocky's not in poverty in Philly.
I mean, I'm guessing, but like, where's Larry Holmes today? Did he die?
I don't know.
See, that's my point.
Yeah, dead or alive, I'd have no idea how to answer that. He's alive, right?
I don't know whether Larry Holmes
Hagler
is alive.
Died
or not.
The other day.
Yeah, Marvelous Marvin Hagler died.
Larry Holmes, he's alive, 71 years old.
So where's he?
I don't know.
I mean, he was the most prominent fighter on the planet for several years.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing though. No clue.
George Foreman's still alive, right?
Yeah. Holmes currently co-hosts a talk show called What the Heck Were They Thinking?
Okay. I've missed that one.
I got nothing. That's all I got. He sold his business complex in Easton to business entrepreneur Gerald Gorman, CEO of Lawyer.com. So he's doing all right. He's doing fine financially.
In the thread, they said maybe Clover Lang has a kid running around that will call Creed out.
Yeah, sure.
Clover Lang's son could be Tom Cruise.
We still haven't gotten Top Gun 2.
Uh-uh.
Where's Top Gun 2?
I don't know, because it was promised like a year ago.
Well, pandemic did some weird stuff, but where's it at?
I don't know.
I'll look it up in a minute. First, tell you about Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com. Go there. Check out the events page. It's updated every day. We'll give you more this week on... The Oxford Pop-Up Spring Edition, kind of the things they're doing in replacement of Double Decker in its normal format here in a few weeks. And this week, the Double Decker Bus Tours, 3 and 4 o'clock on Friday. They're every home SEC baseball weekends on those Fridays, as well as the 2 graduation weekends coming up this spring. And Tunes Around Town on Saturday, 5 to 7, 4 different locations around the square. You can walk around, hear music in different locations, and enjoy your evening after the baseball game. So again, visit OxfordMS.com/events.
We're also brought to you by the law firm of Bain, Moss, and Bowen, located in historic downtown Corinth. Their firm practices a wider range of law, from DUI defense to car wrecks, to representing government entities. Bain, Moss, and Bowen's the only firm in Mississippi made up of a sitting state legislator, a former assistant district attorney, and a former circuit court judge. Their experience is unmatched in that regard. You can tap into it by visiting them at 618 East Waldron Street in Corinth, or by calling them at 662-287-1620. Also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. To learn more about OUB, go to liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. And we're brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
So we'll go to Lane Kiffin in 1 second. He met with the media today. They're telling us that Top Gun Maverick comes out this summer, either a July 2nd star for that.
Yeah, July
release,
2nd.
Yeah, initial release is in Singapore on the 1st, and then looks like the U.S. maybe a day later there. Pete Maverick Mitchell keeps pushing the envelope after years of service as one of the Navy's top aviators. He must soon confront the past while training a new squad of graduates for a dangerous mission that demands the ultimate sacrifice.
Oh.
Again, we've said this 1,000 times on this here podcast because we run several movies into the ground, and this is one of them. Just give me all of the nostalgia you can give me. Yeah. Don't do anything stupid. Don't go out of your way to be weird or creative. Just give me what I want. Give me what I want.
Yeah.
That's it. Don't reinvent the wheel. I want the wheel, the exact wheel. Just do that again.
I'm ordering a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Don't put mushrooms on it. I didn't. Did I ask for mushrooms? Yeah. I didn't. Did I?
Yeah. You can screw this up by overthinking it.
Yeah.
We know exactly what we want. Play Danger Zone at some point and give me the whole deal. That's all I want here. Yeah. And I will walk out of the theater, and I'll be really happy I gave you my $12.50. And go, okay, awesome.
There's a lot of truth to that.
No.
Tons.
It's all I want.
Well, and this is kind of going back to the Apollo Creed thing, three. I guess Creed 3.
Yeah.
I walked out of Creed 2 feeling really good about it all, if I'm honest. I was really happy with the way all of my characters... And I've been following the Rocky thing since Rocky 2.
Yeah.
So don't mess with my thing. And so at the end of Creed 2, Rocky and his son are back together. Adonis is the champ. He's made peace with his dad. Even Ivan Drago is now kind of a lovable character.
Mm-hmm. Some human there.
Yeah. And we're good. I walked out of there going, everybody's going to be all right. And I know that sounds cheesy.
No, I get it.
And corny. And I get it.
It's a lot like a book. You read fiction and you get to the end and you go, okay.
Okay, I'm good. That's a good place for them to all end. And I can kind of.
Because frankly, a book, even more than a movie for readers, you're kind of sad when it's over. You
sure.
Go, ah, okay.
But so that movie ended and I'm good with it. Now you're going to reopen it. And you're going to have to create some new conflict for me to come in. I don't know that I realize they want my money again. I understand that. But I don't know that I want you to mess it up. And so am I tempted as a viewer to go, nope, I'm not going to, I know you made something, but if I don't watch it, if I don't engage in it, I don't have to know.
It's kind of a weird thing for me because, like, Top Gun came out when I was 2-3 years old. Rocky, I don't think I was born for the first 3 of them. However, that's probably 2 of maybe the 10 movies that I would say, like, dot my pop culture life.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen 1,000 times and I can quote and the whole deal. I mean, it's kids I even watched them as a kid having no context of what they were actually about whatsoever. I just saw fights and planes and
I guess I was
kind
in,
of
like,
made it work.
The 5th or 6th grade when Rocky 3 came out.
Yeah, I mean...
And I mean, Eye of the Tiger and that stuff.
I mean, I was only 7 when Rocky 5 came out. It was 1990.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, you got to understand, too, when I was a kid, that was when the Rocky stuff came out, boxing was still a big deal.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, I mean...
Well, it remained a big deal pretty much all the way through the first 5 films. He got all the way through the 80s and still being.
When did boxing start to lose its luster? Was it the Dooku Kim Boom Boom Mancini fight?
See, I would have said, and now see, I know nothing. When I was a kid, I knew nothing but heavyweights. I didn't know anything else. But I would say for the heavyweight division, I don't know. Where do you rate whether it had lost its luster by, like, Bo Holyfield, like, early 90s kind of stuff? Already over by then? Or
started,
is that the very
starting
tail
to
end?
Slip? I mean, to me, the last fight that I remember being actively engaged in would probably be Tyson Holyfield.
And that's 96?
Yeah. Four, five.
Yeah.
3, 4, 94.
I thought I was in junior high-ish. That's what I thought. Tyson Holyfield 2.
Is that the one where he bit his ear?
June of 97.
Okay, so it stopped there.
It was over there.
For me, it was over.
Because you're not giving Lennox any late run.
Well, I mean, I'm using just me as a reference, which is a really crappy reference.
But it's all I got.
I wasn't still actively engaged at that point.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, but I remember back in the late 80s, like when I was in high school and stuff, like Leonard Duran was a big damn deal. Hagler Hearns, Hagler, anybody. But it was there were a lot of fighters. I mean, it was Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran and Marvin Hagler and Thomas Hearns and Muhammad Ali and George Foreman and Ken Norton and Leon Spinks and Larry Holmes. It was a bunch of guys. I mean, it was an era there for a good bit of time when, like, I remember watching the Ray Mancini fight with Dooku Kim. It was outdoors in Las Vegas on a Saturday. They went 15 rounds. It was a great fight.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. I'm reading a couple stories as you're talking about kind of when did experts say it started really losing its luster and whatnot. And most people are not even going all the way through the Holyfield-Tyson kind of stuff. They're kind of stopping early 90s-ish on when it really sort of.
When was Mancini, Dooku Kim?
You have that, 82.
Was it that early? So it lasted a good bit after that.
The paragraph that I just saw here as you were talking is, those individuals can point to tragedies in the ring that impact the sport on occasion. Emil Griffith knocked out Benny Kidd Pere in 1962, and the damage inflicted by Griffith's punches resulted in his death. Ray Boom Boom Mancini was a popular champion in 1982 when he fought South Korean Dooku Kim. The two engaged in a nonstop brawl that ended in Kim's death.
Yeah. Alan makes a really good point in the thread. Roy Jones Jr. and Oscar De La Hoya had some big...
Oh, see, that's fair. See, I wasn't thinking about down...
They did have a couple of big pay-per-views.
I wasn't thinking down weight class.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure outside of Wilder, I could even name a heavyweight today. Tyson Fury, I guess.
Well, yeah, because I mentioned it to you the other day, Josh Anthony and Tyson Fury, and you're like, yeah, sure, awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Because they're going to unify the belt.
Yeah, I didn't know it wasn't unified. I mean.
They're never unified. I don't really understand that. Like, just unify them. Like, let's do it.
I wonder what it is about boxing that fell off like that. Because it was a big deal, man.
That and horse racing kind of fell off at similar times.
Tennis has fallen off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Wimbledon used to be can't miss.
And nah.
I mean, it was big.
Yeah, he died November 18th, 1982. Paradise, Nevada.
Kim did. Yeah. He lasted like a week, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Lane.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Lane Kiffin talked to the media earlier today, about 10 or 11 minutes. I built the file for it, and it is here.
The question I will call on you. First question. Who wants to start us off with the first question? David Johnson, go ahead.
Hey, Lane, the Grove Bowl was standing. You guys are now kind of at the halfway point of spring practice. Just a general assessment of, questions that you wanted answered going into the spring, how everything is on track.
Well, I've been pleased with our defense, limiting explosive plays, attitude, confidence, which is a big key for us. Offensively, we have a lot of players out, really all around, especially skills. So that's not helped the quarterback play, obviously, but very pleased with a lot of guys on defense, returners and new guys. I feel like for whatever it's worth in practice, we feel like a different defense than a year ago.
Any of those new guys in particular that you can talk about that have kind of been maybe out of the package ready a little bit?
Well, I think of the freshmen, you know, a number of them are doing great things. I think Tysheen has really, you know, like coaches say, kind of doesn't seem like a freshman, which has been great. He's played a number of positions, so a lot of those guys are doing a great job.
Thanks.
Parrish?
Lane, I didn't get to see practice Saturday, but it sounds like the JUCO defensive tackles both played. I was wondering if you could just talk about their progress and what you've seen in them so far.
They did well. Isaiah played inside and outside, did really well. Jamon did also, but you know, that's been great to see.
I'm not sure it could be because,
you know, these evaluations have been tough. Haven't ever met guys, let alone see them play a lot of times, you know, and see them in person. So it's kind of been a wild card, not knowing what's coming in, especially for junior college players, which, you know, you'd like to be recruiting those guys to play right away and not be long-term projects.
Last year on the offensive line, you guys didn't sub a whole lot during games. I know a lot of that has to do with the style of offense. But what do you think about the depth that's developing there right now?
Well, we've had a lot of injuries there.
Who's Joey Reed?
You know, so what we do, you know, we haven't for the last couple of days, we have not two spotted, which is hurts our development at other positions, but we just, you know, haven't been able to have two fields. We've only had 10 linemen, I think, today, Joey total scholarship and walk on. So it's kind of hard to, like to work so they can make, you know, feel sense. Good about depth when just don't have any numbers out there.
Jake Wright, go ahead.
Hey, Coach Kiffin. I'm up in Sevierville where Landon Israel is from. And so I was going to ask you about him. Like, what was your reaction whenever you got the letter from him? Have you ever gotten one of those before? And, like, what went through your mind whenever he realized, you know, this is a little kid, 9-year-old, wanting to change fans from Tennessee?
Well, we get a lot of letters over the years and, you know, try to respond to them in some manner. I just thought his was a little bit different. And so just kind of, you know, just said, all right, this was pretty neat for him to take that much time. You know, let's see if we can do something that the kid will remember the rest of his life. So, you know, instead of just sending something, you know, just decided to call him, talk to his dad, and then set up a call with him, you know, so we could personally talk to him and, you know, find him a home for a fan. So, really, really mature kid. You know, think that he'll develop into, you know, a premier fan, 5-star fan, and you know, one that they may, you know, wouldn't need the red shirt. You know, I think he'll be ready to go when he gets here.
What was your recruiting pitch to Ole Miss, you know, over the Alabamas and Tennessees, and like, is it cool that they were a couple of the final schools that he was considering giving your ties to the Alabamas and Tennessees?
Yeah, I mean, just like recruiting, you got to know your opponent and know how invested they are. And I think, you know, some people wrote letters, some people sent some sunglasses and stuff, but, you know, there's nothing like personal touch. So I think, you know, calling him myself and talking to him, I think, was a big factor in this. And so, you know, maybe those guys will learn next time.
Neil, go ahead.
Kind of feel bad following that. I'm curious, you talked about confidence in your program. How has that changed from, you know, when you first got here and maybe from when you guys first started fall camp last August as compared to now?
Well, in some ways it feels like a first year because of not having spring, but you know, having some success on the field, you know, as a team and individual players, you know, has made this a lot easier, obviously, because they feel like, okay, hey, we know this works if we do it right. So, and to be in so many games, close games against really good teams, you know, I think helps that a lot. So there's a much different feel, yes.
And I'm curious, going into a scrimmage like the one you'll have coming up, the one you had this past Saturday, when you know you don't have a lot of the guys that you're hoping to have offensively in the fall, is there a different approach that you take? Is there certain things that you're trying to get out of it that maybe the fan in the stands can't really see?
No, I mean, we're just still trying to look at whoever's out there and, you know, just doing this a while, you know, you don't get too freaked out about one scrimmage. Or, you know, last year, if you were at scrimmages in fall, you would have never thought we were going to play as poorly on defense and as well on offense. You know, we weren't even moving the ball, you know, in some of the scrimmages against down the line guys. So I think that happens a little bit sometimes with tempo. You know, you just, until you really get in the game, as much as you simulate it, you just don't move the ball quite as well in practice and scrimmage formats.
You mad about?
So, you know, we're just trying to get the best out of whoever's out there.
I don't know.
The same day that Penn stock drops.
Nick, go ahead.
Lane, curiosity with the news of last week. Do you pay attention to stuff like the NIL case going on at the Supreme Court level? And are you guys bracing or preparing at all as an athletic department for what changes might happen to college football if and when that passes?
Yeah, we've been in discussions about that or potential things that we do here for the players, you know, for I would say a year now. So we'll be ready whenever that happens.
What kind are some of the discussions you have about?
Well, just bringing in different people, and so that you have a program in place where just not as coaches you're doing it, you know, that, you know, you're able to set these things up and able to manage these, and so that the players are getting the most that they can out of the rules, but at the same time, you know, it's not major distractions for them.
Parrish, go ahead.
Lane, from a skill set perspective, what goes into being a five-star fan that four-star fans and three stars don't bring to the table?
Well, I like fans that, you know, don't change every day, you know, and don't, you know, they look at the big picture. And like I always say, you know, we watch games and, you know, the field goal misses by 6 inches and now that coach and that team's horrible. You know, but, you know, the other team's great. And so, but if it goes in, then it's the other way around. So I think, you know, people that look at the overall picture and understand where you're at, you know, from a program standpoint and where you're headed.
David Johnson.
Yeah, Lane, just curious what you've seen out of true freshman Brandon Buckhalter. And how he's fitting in the wide receivers room and into the rotation this spring.
Yeah, he's doing good. You know, these kids, it's hard. I remind our coaches, you know, all the time, they're seniors in high school still. And so, you know, now they're here playing and going to school and all this stuff. That's why it's important to be a mid-year, because it is very distracting, very hard adjustment. So instead of having to do that in the fall, you're getting it done in the spring. So, you know, they go through a lot of growing pains. But he's got a really bright future.
Thank you.
Yep.
Blake Topmeyer.
Hey, Lane. I wanted to ask you about the one-time transfer exception conversation. The NCAA might pass that rule change this spring to one-time transfer exception rule. If the NCAA does pass that, do you think the SEC should also allow for one-time transfers within the conference, or would you rather see the SEC keep its rule making transfers within the conference sit out of here?
I think they should be able to. I mean, it's about players' rights and the ability to transfer. Why now you're going to limit where they can go? So, and this is all about, you know, like everybody says, ADs, coaches, everybody else can move. Why can't the players? So now you're going to limit where they can go. And so, kid wants to go to a program closer to home or whatever reasons, and he can't. And why would you want to do that from a conference standpoint? If you got good players, you know, you're in the best conference in America by far. It's not even close. So why would you want players to transfer and not be able to stay within conference and make your conference better, but be able to go make other conferences better? I would not understand that.
Thanks.
Any more questions for Coach?
So that was Lane Kiffin earlier today. Five-star fans, four-star fans, some freshmen.
Transfer portal.
Transfer portal.
One-time eligibility waivers.
This is April.
How much of that did you watch last night?
First half, 5 minutes in. It was flippity-flip time.
I tried to become invested when, I guess, Gonzaga cut it 38-26. And then you thought, maybe. But everything looked so hard. They just, there was no...
When it went to 16 or so, I was like, that's it, I'm done. Good night.
Drew wasn't even really paying attention most of the second half. He was not even necessarily watching the game. He was like jotting stuff down for like 10 minutes there, just kind of sitting in his seat.
Maybe taking notes for the book he's going to write, you know?
Got to thank some people here in a little while.
Yeah.
It was a thorough kicking.
It was dominant.
They played exceptional. Gonzaga did not play well. Gonzaga looked a little gassed.
They did. Gonzaga reminded me of Duke in 92 when they won back then. But they beat Kentucky in that emotional game.
The Leitner game?
Yeah. And then they played that really high-level semifinal game. Can't remember who they played.
Was it 91 or 92?
It was Leitner's last year. And then they played, I think, Kansas in the final, and they just had nothing in the tank.
They win?
Yeah, they won.
Oh, they did win, though.
Yeah.
In 92, they beat Michigan in the final.
That's right. They beat the Fab Five in the final. Played a really high-level game against the Fab Five. Got geeked up for the Fab Five. And then I think they played Kansas two nights later, and there wasn't a lot left in the tank.
Yeah, beat Kentucky 104-103.
The best college game I can ever remember. Someone says it's Indiana they played. Maybe it was – yeah, it could be. I don't know. The point of that is that – that Elite Eight game against Kentucky was so good that people like me who love the sport can't remember who the hell played in the final. It was Indiana, wasn't it?
81-78.
Yeah.
Over Indiana.
Yeah. That's right, because that's when Mike Krzyzewski and Bobby Knight sort of went on the outs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Memphis beat Arkansas 82-80 in the Sweet 16 in that tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. I mean, it was at the Metrodome, the Final Four.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Hurley, most outstanding player.
Not Grant Hill?
Or Christian Leitner.
Grant Hill was so good.
Christian Leitner scored 115 points in the tournament, however.
He was a great college player. He was an okay pro. But he was a great college player. One of the greatest college players ever.
Career at all.
Had some injuries, got moved around a little bit. Couldn't score night in and night out at the NBA level. Played for a while.
On the 92 Dream Team.
I have no problem with that.
No, but I don't either.
They said they were going to take a college player, and he was the best college player.
So.
He had a better college career than Shaquille O'Neal. Period. Shaquille will say that. People still will fight about that. That should have been Shaq. Yeah, well, that's hindsight.
Drafted third overall, though. Did play 13 seasons.
I mean, he played in the league for a good while.
All-star in 97.
He had some injuries in Minnesota, I think.
Drafted by the T-Wolves there, 92 to 96.
He was in Atlanta for a little while.
96 to 99. Pistons, 99-2000. Mavs, 2000-2001. Wizards, 2001-2004. Heat, 04-05.
Oh.
And then he was assistant coach for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants in 2012. He's in the College Basketball Hall of Fame.
I would think so.
Yeah. So.
Yes, Grant Hill's dad played in the NFL. Played for the Cowboys, if I recall correctly.
Oh, really?
Think so. God, Grant Hill was so good. He had those ankle injuries that kind of derailed his career. But there was a time in the NBA where he was a top 10 player. Briefly, but he was.
Yeah, over his first six seasons, he averaged 16 points a game.
To what, Leitner?
In the NBA.
Leitner or Hill?
Leitner.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of revisionist history on Christian Leitner where people go, he didn't belong on the Dream Team. Well, no, absolutely. Was he one of the 12 best players
in the world?
No, but they said, hey, we're going to take one college player. That was their rule. Wasn't his fault. And he was the college player to take. He was a celebrated college player.
You have no issue with this.
Who will tell you that he felt out of place with those guys. Of course.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, duh. I mean, it's Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and Charles Barkley and Karl Malone and John Stockton and Chris Mullin and
Hakeem, I guess.
No, because it was Clyde Drexler.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin. I mean, shit.
Was Mullin the worst player?
Probably. And I think Mullin, because Wilkins got hurt. But Mullin could really shoot. And if you go back and remember the international game, you had to have guys who could shoot to space the floor because the paint rules are different.
They're wider.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leitner, Robinson, Ewing, Bird, Pippen, Jordan, Drexler, Malone, Stockton, Mullin, Barkley, Magic.
I mean, damn. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, David Robinson, I mean, had a
decent career. He hung around for a minute.
He had a moment or two in the NBA.
Still really good at 96 and then started.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously still good. They're the best team in the world, but.
Yeah.
96, Barkley, Penny, Grant Hill, Malone, Reggie Miller, Hakeem, Shaq, Gary Payton, Pippen, Mitch Richmond, David Robinson, and John Stockton.
Still pretty loaded.
Still okay there in 96.
That tells you how good John Stockton was, doesn't it? I mean, John Stockton, you know, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and they were diving into the whole Stephen A. Smith, Russell Westbrook argument last week. Where Stephen A. Smith said, you know, it's got to really bother Russell Westbrook that he doesn't have rings. And Russell Westbrook kind of pushed back. The whole, if to be great, you have to have rings, when rings becomes the end-all, be-all, you really lose a ton of nuance when you talk about great players in any sport. Think of how many great basketball players have played in the NBA who never won a ring. I mean, do you really want to die on the hill that says Charles Barkley wasn't a great player? I mean, do you really do you really want to die on the Patrick Ewing hill because he lost a game 7? Because he couldn't beat the greatest that ever was? Is that a hill you really want to fight on?
Especially in the NBA, not many people did win rings, frankly.
Well, to
a
this
lot of dynasties, a lot well, of
to this day.
Runs.
I mean, you know, Jordan got 6. Kobe got 5.
Takes away a lot of rings.
The Spurs won a bunch of rings. LeBron's got a bunch of rings.
I mean, Dirk was lucky as hell to get one.
Well, and Dirk's the outlier.
Yeah.
Dirk's kind of the one guy.
Reggie never got a ring.
Yeah, no, couldn't get past the Bulls.
Yeah.
Dirk's kind of the one guy that stayed with the team for that length of time, and it paid off. Could have won 2 rings.
They beat the Heat.
Beat the Heat and lost to the Heat.
Yeah.
Which is, again, proof that it's always the same teams that get there. I mean, it's just hard to win a ring. I mean, are you really judging Russell Westbrook on nothing but rings? Now, the flip side of that is, if let's say Russell Westbrook, the exact same numbers, had 2 or 3 rings right now, would we judge him differently?
Oh.
You're like, oh, top 5 player.
Pick a different whole pantheon at all, yeah.
But the fact that he doesn't have rings doesn't diminish from how good of a player he is.
Yeah. Podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs and G&M Pharmacy. G&M 662-236-2222. They deliver locally in the Oxford area. They also provide MedSync for your prescriptions the same day each month to take care of you, whether it be one pickup form in their pharmacy or one delivery. You get the medicines you need when you need it. So whether it be on the square in Holly Springs or you get on South Lamar there in Oxford, 662-236-2222.
We're also brought to you by John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. Part of Virtuoso, a worldwide network of travel partners, allows him to supply his clients with added values, unique benefits, simply not available to other travelers. What you do is you get in touch with John, you give him some parameters, you give him a budget, and you let him give you options. And no, you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. first-time clients save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. Get in touch with the people at Pinnacle Trust, their 401k advisory services team. And what they'll do is they'll conduct a complimentary, no-obligation benchmarking and analysis of your current 401k plan. Mention that you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the Oxford Exxon podcast. You get 10% off your first year's fees. Also brought to you by the College Corner. It's your one-stop rebel shop. Two locations in the Jackson area. You can also go to collegecornerstore.com, plus find them on Facebook and Instagram. Whether you're tailgating in Oxford or home gating with friends and family, the College Corner has you covered for game day. The largest selection of Rebel gear in Central Mississippi. And we're brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air is the name you can trust. They have more than 50 years of professional HVAC experience in Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. Get in touch with them. Make sure that your cooling system is in tip-top shape. You know what's coming. You've lived in the South. It's coming in May and June and July and August. It's going to be hot. You want to make sure that you're ready to go. 662-801-1777. And we're brought to you by Lammons Fine Jewelry in Oxford. Lammons is at 1126 North Lamar Boulevard. They've been serving the Oxford area for three quarters of a century. Engagement rings, wedding rings, watches, pearls, fashion jewelry, children's jewelry, collectibles, and more. Lammons is the gold standard in fine jewelry. LammonsFineJewelry.com or call them at 662-234-2777.
In 2000 is the first time the Dream Team was kind of really pushed multiple times. They beat Lithuania 85-83 in the semis.
Who was on that Lithuania team? Does it wasn't that
I'm sure I can,
there were a couple of NBA players on that team.
Oh, were they really?
I think so.
And then they beat France in close-ish games a couple times there along the way as well in pool play, and then in 2000 Summer Olympics.
I don't know why I thought that Lithuania team had a couple of NBA players on it.
Hold it up in a second. That was the first, if you want to call it a fall off, like Dream Team in 2000, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, Ray Allen, Vin Baker, Vince Carter, Kevin Garnett, Tim Hardaway, Allen Houston, Jason Kidd, Antonio McDyess, Alonzo Mourning, Gary Payton, and Steve Smith.
Yeah, not the same caliber.
Not the same dude.
Still really good players, but.
Good enough.
Yeah.
2000 Lithuanian basketball.
Any names that stick out?
Not to me, but I don't know what that would mean.
Yeah.
Or not me.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at it. I don't know what makes me think there were some players on that team.
Whatever. All right. Let's see what else we got. If you're curious about some pairings at the Masters, Jordan Spieth going off last at 2 p.m. with Colin Morikawa. Let's see, Dustin Johnson is going off at 10:30 exactly with Lee Westwood and reigning U.S. amateur champion Tyler Strapasi, which is always the case. The ceremonial tee shots are at 7:45. Bubba Watson, Brooks Koepka, and Victor Hovland at 10:06 a.m. Xander Schauffele, Rajon Rahm, and Rory McIlroy at 10:42. Patrick Reed, Daniel Berger, Paul Casey at 10:54, Mickelson, Fleetwood, and Scheffler at 1:12, and then Justin Thomas, 1:48, just before Spieth. He is with Louis Oosthuizen and Tony Finau. So a few different pairings there for the Masters on Thursday. It looks like a chance of rain on Friday, maybe a chance of rain on Saturday. Everything looks really good on Thursday and Sunday leading into the week. So betting favorites have Spieth way higher after he won the Valero Open last week to get his first win since the 2017 Open Championship.
So I was watching this morning. Vijay Singh was watching
Shambo
do the speed thing where he hits it literally as hard as he possibly can.
Yeah.
Is that a drill to get loose, or is that just to be a psychopath, or what is that?
He is a psychopath. He
Vijay Singh was – he literally – you could have said, I'll offer you $1 million to leave right now, and he'd be like, no, I'm good.
I'm watching this.
I'm in. He was staying out of the way. He did not appear to be saying a word, but he was locked the F in.
because DeChambeau was just unloading. I mean,
well,
was,
so the people at home who didn't watch this, yeah, and you're like me, I'm not used to this, and I was watching it going, whoa, what? So the caddy decked out in the white green outfit would underhand toss the golf ball to DeChambeau, who appeared to like almost approach it like a free throw. He would put it and then come in and not, he didn't do all that deal where he addressed the ball and all that stuff. Just, and he reared back and was seeing, it was like top golf. I'm going to see how far I can hit this, I suppose. And then as soon as he hit it, the caddy would toss him another one. He'd set it up, free throw it, boom, toss. And he did it. In the video that I watched, he had to have swung 12 times.
Had to be exhausted.
And, I mean, I was so tired watching him because the torque on his body, my back was hurting at the end. And Vijay Singh, who's another professional golfer who appears to be less of a psychopath than DeChambeau, is just watching. And Vijay Singh has no facial expression whatsoever, does not even appear to blink, and is in some form of awe just watching this. Thinking, here's a professional athlete. You could, I think if I were doing the thought cloud, it's, I couldn't, he was thinking, this is something I could not do. He plays golf for a living. So,
won a lot of money. So, I mean, he's old now, but he won a lot of money.
So, Vijay Singh is used to driving ranges and getting warm and getting ready. And he's watching this in a complete, like a, just a fan would watch. It was like watching some of the older NBA players stop to watch the slam dunk competition, where a couple of times they look at each other like, did you see that? Wow. I couldn't do that.
He's a psychopath. He thinks he finds scientific ways to be better nonstop. He's playing a game right now where he won't tell people what's actually in his golf bag. Apparently he's using some different club or something. He won't tell everybody what it is.
Okay.
But to his credit, you know, something working or not working does not mean you win every time you play. You're never going to win every time you play.
Well, no, even Tiger didn't win every time
he played. But he has increased his odds of winning by going, I'm going to formulate my body. I'm going to do everything I can do to hit the damn thing as far as I can hit it. And if I hit it as far as I can hit it, even if I'm offline, I'm closer and I'm better out of the rough with the wedge than I would be with the 7-iron back in the fairway back there. And he goes, by God, I'm just going to hit it as close as I can hit it all the time. Okay. It's amazing how straight he hits it, given the swing speed that he uses. Well, it is the damnedest thing.
Well, I will tell you this. We started talking about some golf ratings. Mm-hmm. I'm more – like, if you tell me on Sunday, hey, that DeChambeau guy is in it, I'm more inclined to hit the button because I'm at least interested.
He's going to take some lines over the course of the week where you're like, that's not a line, and give it a shot.
Well, I'd rather watch that than watch the boring.
There is a little bit of Happy Gilmore in this. It's just hit the hell out of it and see where it goes. But he's incredibly straight. He's actually just basically as straight as he was when he was a normal human being back in the day. But
I got to tell you, he was crushing the ball this morning.
Yeah, now that was a little exaggerated, obviously, what he was doing, but yeah.
But, I mean, it made a different sound.
He made contact.
By the way, did you hear the Shohei Ohtani home run?
No.
Sunday night?
Uh-uh.
Holy mother of God, the sound it made. It was like a cannon shot.
Has he been...
I mean... All I saw was Carson's kind of my morning after sports update person.
Yeah.
Because he comes in and looks at his phone and eats breakfast and will tell me a few things. And so he's watching a video and I hear this crack. What was that? He goes, Shohei Ohtani. Same day that he pitched, did the whole deal. I mean, he's remarkable.
It's funny you said that. So seriously, 6 minutes ago, somebody tweeted, it's got a ton of retweets. We are all Vijay Singh watching Bryson DeChambeau on the practice range. Vijay Singh just quote tweets it and says, I told him he wasn't swinging fast enough. So 6 minutes ago there from Vijay on the Twitter.
I mean, the club was moving so fast.
It's like wrapping around his head.
And the torque on the after swing was such that, like, I don't know how. Dude has a very strong core, I'll say that, because otherwise you're just.
Now, here's the part of that, and we'll stop after this, is that I don't think this is sustainable for a long career at all. You're going to hurt yourself. There's no
certain,
way to avoid it.
There's a certain Jake Arrieta-ness to this.
But there's also a certain, I think, in his head is, by God, I'm just going to win as much as I can for 10 years, and after that, we'll figure it out.
Which I respect.
I'm going to maximize my opportunities right now, and then we'll go from there. Because he's a smart guy. Now, look, he gets a lot of mileage out of the fact that he went to SMU, and he acts like he's a rocket scientist because he went to SMU. I mean, he's a smart enough guy, but he's not NASA.
Yeah.
He has to know that this is not going to be sustainable for 15, 20 years. Like a Mickelson who has a long, fluid swing. And I mean, it's just Tiger. I mean, you're beating the hell out of your body.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not going to work. But I think in his mind, just win. Just win.
If you make enough millions of dollars in 10 years, you don't have to work.
Mm-hmm. So.
Not everybody even wants to be Phil.
No.
Not everybody wants to play on the tour till you're 50.
Yeah, sure. I'm intrigued. I'm all in too. So,
what's he ever DeChambeau? Has he won anything?
Yeah, he won the U.S. Open last year.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's got a major. You know, he was a famed amateur champion. I mean, he was like the number one amateur in the world for a long time. He won the USAM. He was top college player at SMU. I think SMU got put on golf probation while he was there, though. I think. I think I'm right in saying that.
LSU football just giggles.
We screw up so much that they put SMU golf.
Yeah.
Well, when you see what they did, too, it's like, oh, come, like, who gives? Like,
right.
It's like, well, they got too much equipment from this guy, and they did this, and it's like, okay. Like, yeah, he's only the fifth player in history to have won the NCAA championship and the USAM in the same year. So he's a very decorated amateur player.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So PGA championship tied for fourth last year. Won the U.S. Open. He's never finished better than T21 at the Masters, and he did that in 2016.
Well, that course is not really set up for let's see how far you can hit it.
There's not much rough. No, if you can avoid.
That's what I mean. You don't. It's not a forgiving course if you.
His strategy makes sense to me. If he actually can hit it anywhere near straight or miss huge. It's the little miss at Augusta gets you because you're under the trees and the pine straw and you're having.
Right.
I mean, but if you can hit it far enough offline, you just hit back over the damn trees. You're in the other fairway. I mean,
yeah.
Because the rough is not penal like it's penal at the U.S. Open. Maybe. I mean, I'm intrigued. We'll see what happens as it moves through. But nonetheless, more shows for you this week and plenty at RebelGrub.com as we know it. An update on Tim Elko, at least by tonight, I would assume, after Ole Miss and Alcorn State. A 6 o'clock start for that one. So hope everybody has a great day. Talk to you soon. Take care.